Time to take a look at your pet's health now with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor in the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad you're along today. And if you have a question about your pet's health, you should call in right now. As a matter of fact, we'll get you on pretty fast at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. Dr. Sandy, welcome back.
It's nice to be back.
On this cold, cold day.
I know. But, you know, my dogs, and I do say dogs. I have a new one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Another new pet.
I did. And, you know, I picked a coldest weekend in record, you know, to bring a new dog home. But she's a 3.5-year-old English bulldog. Her name's Vanna. She's white. Ha ha. You know. So, and she is what I am going to be calling my project dog. She has a little bit of a weight problem, you know. So when we picked her up, my daughter started crying in the car. Just said, "Mom, she's so overweight. I'm so embarrassed." But you know, this is all stuff that we can work on and get her back slim and trim so she can be an active bulldog.
Yeah. You were telling me before the show that there's a new drug that'll be coming out on the market to deal with your pet's weight.
That's correct. Yeah, I was at a meeting in San Antonio just a week and a half ago, and. You know, and the drug is called Slentrol. It's actually been on the news a little bit periodically.
Yeah.
Isn't available yet for consumers to be able to purchase or veterinarians to be able to order. But it was just kind of the launch of this new product. It is not a magic bullet. It is not, you know, going to solve every dog's problems, but it is a very unique drug that suppresses appetite in a very unique way and stops a little bit of the fat absorption. So it's, you know, about 90% of the dogs will end up losing weight on it. So, yeah.
And it'll help if you get your dog out for long walks? And...
Oh, you know, that's the number one thing, because nothing will change for the dog unless you keep up with getting their metabolism up and making some changes in your habits, too, as to how you feed them and how much you feed them and what you feed them. The ideal thing about this drug is it gives the owners the opportunity to get that overweight dog up and moving, because they're going to lose weight. They'll be more active. They'll feel better. So they'll start an exercise program and hopefully start staying with it. And they'll be able to start learning portion control, because they'll know how much food the dog needs to eat to be able to maintain their ideal body weight. So if they can keep up with that, perfect. But, you know, as soon as you go off of this, all that weight's going to come back on, because the dog's going to be back to its old habits again unless the owner keeps up with it. So it's all owner dependent.
So it's a little training of the owner, too.
It is, yeah.
And, you know, in weather like this, it's so hard to get outside. I saw a little dog the other day, and it was like it was tiptoeing around, you know, just sort of jumping. It was so cold, and he didn't want to put his little feet down.
Yeah, hey, my feet get cold, and I'm wearing shoes. And so when they're outside in this kind of cold, they can, you know, get frozen toes and ear tips pretty quickly. So we have to, you know, be aware of that and try to come up with maybe some unique games in the house, going to doggy daycare more often, which is one of my clients was just in this morning and said they're going twice a week now and sometimes three times on cold weather like this. If you've got a dog that's, you know, can go to a place like that. In my house, we just are doing kind of laps around the kitchen, living room, and dining room and playing, you know, chase and ball in the house and up and down the stairs and trying to keep mentally and physically stimulated that way.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, lots of people online to visit with you, so let's go to the phones. And Paul in Madison is up first. Paul, hi, thank you for calling. Paul, are you there? Oh, wait a minute. Paul, hold on a second. First, turn the on button on.
Okay.
All right, now, hi, Paul.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Dr. Sawchuk.
Hi.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for taking my call. This is very timely. We have a 13-year-old Siamese female cat that was the runt of the runt of the runts of the litter. She was just tiny. And she developed a respiratory infection. And the way we noticed is she was kind of wobbling and wasn't eating much. We took her in, and they put her on amoxicillin. They also did blood work for her kidney function. And they said that she was in kidney failure. And they didn't exactly say how bad it was, but I guess her creatinine level was up around 15.
Ooh, that is extremely high. Yeah.
We didn't think that she was going to make it, but they gave us amoxicillin, and they gave us a syringe for giving her some wet cat food, for sick kitties that helps to, it's got a lot more calories in it.
Mm-hmm.
A potassium citrate gel,
okay.
I think, and IV infusion needles for giving her fluids
okay.
Twice or three times a day.
How old is she now, by the way?
13 years old.
Okay.
Okay.
And like I said, we thought she wasn't going to make it, and it's amazing. She is pretty much back to her old self. She's eating again.
Wonderful.
We are down, and she's drinking. We're down to just giving her infusions once a day, subcutaneous in the back. Mm-hmm. And
so do you have... Yeah. So is there an issue?
Well, yeah. The question I have is, they did another blood test, and her creatinine levels dropped dramatically.
Beautiful.
Yep. Not down to 2 or below that, I guess, which is normal.
Uh-huh.
But they said that we would always have to, till the end of her life, continue these daily liquid infusions in her back.
Yeah.
And what I wondered was, is it possible that her kidney would come back to full function?
No. No. I'm going to say that right. The kidney is not one of those organs like the liver that can regenerate. But she's a cat, and that's what's unique about her. Cats are phenomenal with being able to live for a long period of time with poor functioning kidneys. And it's unlike dogs. Dogs don't tolerate having poor functioning kidneys very long, but cats can live sometimes for years if they're managed appropriately. My guess is what happened is your cat's probably been trucking along with poor functioning kidneys, but being able to take in enough water to maintain her hydration status. And then something happened. She got sick. She got a respiratory infection, which made her not drink enough water. And that pushed her over the edge and caused her renal values or kidney values to go up, made her dehydrated, and just made everything worse. So yeah, whether your cat's going to need to be on fluids the rest of her life is really going to depend on whether she's going to be stressed in the future again, whether you can keep up with getting enough fluid into her orally through either a kitty water fountain, the wet food that you're feeding her. That may be enough to be able to support her. The big things with kidney disease in cats that need to be monitored, and I'm glad your veterinarian is, it sounds like they're right on top of it, are checking potassium levels, because potassium is one of those things that gets wasted very easily through poor functioning kidneys, and that can affect their appetite when their potassium drops down, and then they don't want to eat, and then that even lowers the potassium more. So many cats that are in have kidney disease need to be on a potassium supplement. Watching those kidney values, and if they're starting to creep up, definitely getting her on some subcutaneous fluids, and it's good that you've learned how to do that at home, and just kind of have them on hand for those emergency type things. Checking her blood pressure. You didn't mention that, but cats with kidney disease can sometimes run into troubles with being hypertensive, and so that should be a routine thing that's done on your kitty to make sure that her blood pressure is staying normal, because we know as that blood pressure creeps up, it's going to have more worsening effect on the kidney function too. So, get those things monitored. And then if your cat will eat it, some of those special diets that are made for cats that have kidney disease that help just make it a little bit easier for those kidneys to function. So, doing all those things, she's 13 right now. She could go on and live for, we may hear from you 5 years from now that she's still hanging in there as long as she isn't stressed and you keep everything functioning like that.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Paul. Colette in River Falls, we go to you next. Hi, Colette.
Hi. I hope you can hear me. I have this bad cold.
We can hear you.
Okay. The question I have is about trying to prevent this dog from eating things that were not food. I lost my last dog from eating some things after, he had surgeries a lot. He had, 2 surgeries and a couple of close calls from eating things like, horse hooves he found and dug out of some horse manure and a cassette tape and all sorts of odd things. And he finally, at 7 years, he ate 1-2 things too many.
Oh, boy.
He was part golden retriever and part something else. And my neighbor's golden retriever ate a rock and nearly died. I just got a replacement golden retriever puppy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm constantly hauling everything. I mean, just finding things I didn't even know were there. Little tiny. And is there any way?
Well, you're doing the right thing by just being there and being observant when they're young, so that when they pick up something that is a non-food item, that is not something that's safe for them to play with, like a dog-approved toy, that you are there to take it out of their mouth and substitute something that is appropriate. So they start learning, what is the appropriate thing that I can have in my mouth? And it's just going to be lots and lots and lots of repetition. But, you know, there's even things out there that the well-trained dog, you know, may decide to eat and get into trouble with. We had a dog in yesterday that had been vomiting and took an x-ray of its abdomen, and it's got some, it looks like vertebra, like bones of something stuck in its intestinal tract, and it's heading to surgery. So, you know, that's too good to turn down for some dogs. So, again, it's just being outside with your dogs, being observant, knowing what they're getting into, and getting them in early for, you know, diagnostic work before you run into serious complications from having a foreign body.
And some good training, too.
Good training, yeah. And it's just that, you know, keep substituting and being there to make sure that they know what's right. And that's the big thing. We tend to say no a lot, but we never tell a dog what's yes. And so keeping, for a puppy, keeping an appropriate chew item in your pocket so that when they pick up your shoe, you can say, you know, well, one, you wouldn't be leaving your shoes out because you're now a good dog owner and shoes are never left out. You know, I have a friend who called me the other day. Guess what their dog chewed up? Brand new laptop computer. Left it on the kitchen counter, came into the kitchen, keys, plastic parts everywhere. And then she's been pooping out keys. But yes, I mean, that's, she even swallowed a bunch of pieces. So they will get into trouble. So you really have to dog-proof your house as well.
Good luck, Colette. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Ken in Burlington next. Ken, hi to you.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is regarding a 28-month-old black Labrador retriever that I own, and he has contracted Lyme's disease. Mm-hmm. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, yep. I'm sorry. And he seems to be doing pretty well. We discovered it about a year ago. He was never vaccinated against Lyme's, and people have various opinions about that, different vets. Apparently, he should have been, and he slipped through the cracks at my veterinarian. All our other dogs are vaccinated, but he was on the antibiotic. We double-dosed him. We did quite a bit of research regarding this, and he's doing pretty well. I took him back for his annual checkup, and she says he's way back up on his titer test.
Okay.
And we put him back on the antibiotic. And this time around, there were no indications. He's been quite energetic. He's a working dog. We train almost every day, and we train hard on Sundays with a group for hunting and retriever tests. And I'm wondering what this means when his titer's back up. And my wife is a biologist, and she has some different opinions than the vet.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering if it's something that I really need to worry about or just check every 6 months, and would it have any bearing on a desire to have the dog bred with a female? And is that still a possibility?
Well, I don't think breeding is going to be a problem unless he has some other genetic problems. I mean, you want to make sure that prior to breeding, that you've got his eyes checked by a board-certified ophthalmologist, and especially for field dogs, hips and elbows certified. If he passes those tests, then, you know, regardless of his Lyme status, you should be able to breed him. The tests that I like to see run on dogs that have that were suspicious of having Lyme disease is called a quantitative C6 peptide. And I'm not sure if that's what your veterinarian is running at all or not, but it's,
she keeps calling it a titer.
Okay. And it may be a titer, but it's the actual name of it is a quantitative C6 peptide. That will give you
that is what she's running.
Yeah, most likely, because that's what most vets are running these days now on dogs. And you're right. I mean, when these values go up, it could be that your dog this fall was re-exposed again, or it may be a hidden infection that's resurfaced again. The best things you can do are, like your veterinarian is doing, checking probably every 6 months. If the titer is high, wonderful. Get them on, not wonderful, but get them on medication. Recheck after the treatment, you know, 6 months afterwards to see if it's dropped, to see if you've had success. Practice good tick control using either Frontline or Advantix. There's
been on Frontline.
Good.
It just didn't work.
Yeah, it's not 100% effective. And, you know, the Lyme vaccine is not 100% effective either. So you do the best you can and you watch for ticks. And boy, those Lyme ticks, the deer ticks, are really hard to find. And so it's a tough disease. And I'm sorry your dog contracted it. But, you know, you're doing everything you can. It sounds like your vet's doing a great job.
Be hanging in there just fine
and good,
just as energetic as ever.
Wonderful. And be watching kidney function as well, because Lyme disease is one of those diseases that can affect the kidneys. And that besides having, you know, just watching for lameness, you may want to be looking for protein in the urine and getting a urine check as well.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Ken.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest clinical professor in the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Glad to have you listening in. And we have an open line or two, so you can get on pretty fast at 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in Madison, at 263-1890. And let's go to Pete in Campbellsport next. Hi, Pete. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a 10-year-old farm dog, Great Big Pyrenees, and about 2 weeks ago, he didn't come in at the appointed time, and I went out to look for him, and he was next to the barn door, and that dog didn't know who I was. Hmm. And he walked really slow, and it finally dawned on him who I was, and I thought, well, he's 10 or 11 years old. I tied him up in the dairy barn in a nice, warm bed of straw, and I took him for a little walk in the evening on a leash, and he walked really slow. And I thought, well, we'll see what happens overnight. He's either going to be better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
Next morning, he was right as rain.
Huh.
A little bit weak, but it took about 2-3 days, and he was his old self. He jumps into the pickup truck and goes along and wags his tail and fetches sticks and the whole kit and caboodle. So what happened?
Could he have gotten into anything? You know, that's, you worry about, you know, drug exposure. I doubt you'd have things laying like that laying around. But, yeah, you know, this, I had a dog in that got into the son's pot brownies not too long ago. And it came in almost comatose. And so, you know, it was obviously, you know, drug induced. But the other thing that I worry about in older dogs, too, is things like, did your dog have a seizure? And this was all kind of the post-seizure effect where they're stuporous and they don't recognize who's around, and they may, you know, just, they're just not themselves. And that can last for anywhere from a few minutes to sometimes several hours afterwards. Low blood sugar can result in them being mentally dull as well. And this time of the year, cold temperatures. When it's icy cold like this outside, hypothermia can be presented as just a dog that's very stuporous, just doesn't know who they are or where they're supposed to go and are mentally dull. So it could be that if your dog is an older dog, older dogs have a harder time maintaining their body temperature, especially if they've lost some muscle mass and so on. They're just not going to be as tolerant of cold. Maybe just bringing your dog into the barn, giving them a warm bed, allowed the body temperature to warm up. And you know, so if this happens again, take your dog's temperature. If it's less than 97 degrees, we're in trouble. And that could be why your dog was acting like this.
It was before this cold snap.
It was. Okay.
And this dog happens to love cold weather for some reason.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I kind of ruled that out. I don't know. There was no...
Well, maybe a seizure then.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, getting your pet in for a good physical exam and maybe a little bit of blood work to see if there's anything abnormal like low blood sugar would be a good idea.
You never know what a farm dog will eat either, I guess.
I know, yeah.
No, you sure don't. Pete, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. But probably be a good advice to get that dog into your veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
Joe in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Larry, this is a great show, and Dr. Sawchuk, thank you for taking the time to answer questions for us folks.
Well, you're welcome.
We have, my question is, we have a cat that's a domestic long hair. He's almost 18 years old. And he started limping back in December, and I took him in and had a couple x-rays, and the doctor said that he has either degenerative bone disease in his rear quarters, in his hind quarters, and or bone cancer.
Oh, boy.
And she didn't know, and the cost of finding out is pretty much prohibitive at this state. So my question is, she said she couldn't believe how old he was. He's well-groomed. His eyes are bright. He's mm-hmm. alert. His heart is strong. His lungs are clear. His bodily functions are okay.
Uh-huh.
And but he's having trouble getting around, of course. And
mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, do we just use common sense on euthanasia, or is there some kind of criteria that we should be looking at as well?
Well, these are such tough questions because, you know, I think the things that you need to be looking at are, and you know your cat better than anybody, if he stops grooming himself, his appetite decreases significantly, if he is unable to get up and do the normal things that cats do, such as get to the litter box, then quality of life, I think, is failing, and it may be time to make a decision. But I'm always surprised some owners are able to do, you know, good hospice care for their pets, and they'll keep their pets in diapers, and they'll practice good pain management, and they'll work on, you know, really feeding them well, and, you know, keep them going longer than other people can. And it just depends on how much time you can devote to making sure that your pet is pain-free and hydrated and fed and doing well. I can't make that decision for you, but boy, you know, I worry if your veterinarian's concerned about bone cancer. It's not very common in cats, but there are some things that can invade into bones. There's a type of cancer called multiple myeloma, which can affect the bones, and it can be very, very painful. And so if your vet is worried about that, again, that's something to be talking about, maybe getting your cat on some type of long-term pain management. There's a drop that you can put under their tongue. It's called buprenorphine drops, and we use that for cats that have need pain control. And they tend to tolerate it real well, and so that might be something to consider asking your veterinarian for, to give your cat, you know, at least the last little bit of their life relatively pain-free time.
Yeah.
Well, he was on some pain medicine. We had to give him, I don't know, orally,
mm-hmm.
and I don't remember what it was, but I saved one back, but there again, I guess the quality of life comes into play too. Again, he can get around. I mean, it just
yeah.
he has to take a few steps and sit down and and think about it. But, how long does a person keep?
And that is going to be a day by day thing with him right now. And I wish I could tell you that, you know, You don't plan your summer vacation because you're probably still taking care of your cat or whatever. I don't know. And that's something that, you know, your veterinarian, by knowing how severe the x-rays are, may be able to give you a better idea. But it sounds like he's still going strong. So enjoy every day you have with them, because you never know when it's all of a sudden something's going to happen and you'll have to make that horrible decision.
Well, thank you both for your time, and God bless you both.
Thank you very much for calling, Joe. It's one of the toughest decisions.
It is. It is.
It
is so hard. And even when it's, you know, almost cut and dry, you've got a diagnosis. And in this case, we don't really know what's going on. So he's just managing the cat and hoping for the best. So,
Thanks, Joe. Diana in Blair, we'll go to you next. Hi, Diana.
Hi. Appreciate the program.
Sure.
I have a corgi. Probably a mix, but anyway, he turned 7 about the last part of December, early part of January, and I've been reading a lot of different things about whether to feed dogs senior dog food. Some things I've read said no, it's too many fillers. Some things I've read said yes, it's important. How do you know when you should start feeding your dog senior dog food, and what are some guidelines on that?
Yeah, you know, and this is one of those things where it's going to depend on the size and the breed of the dog. Smaller dogs don't age as quickly as large breed dogs. Large breed dogs, a 7-year-old Great Dane is now well into their senior years. A Corgi, though, is just hitting kind of their middle age prime. So although the bags will tell you to sometimes start when they're 7 years of age or so, the difference between most of the senior foods and regular dog foods are that the senior diets will sometimes have higher levels of antioxidants in it, so that Again, as you get older, just, you know, like some people take, you know, antioxidant vitamins to help slow down the aging process. Some of them will have joint protective agents in them, glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate, to help with the arthritis that's probably going to happen to most pets as they get older as well. And senior pet food is a little bit lower in calories than regular dog food, but be careful, because if you've had your dog on a light or a less active food and then you switch to a senior actually has more calories than the light dog food, and they can start putting weight on, which is going to aggravate their joints. So you want to make sure that you're feeding the correct caloric amount for your dog and not just, you know, base it on what they recommend on the bag. And sometimes the senior foods will have a little bit of extra fiber in it to help keep them regular if they have a problem on that end. So I've seen dogs stay on regular adult food their entire life and live and do just fine. But if you feel that your dog has any issues that you want to, you know, help prevent, you know, like some of the arthritis stuff, then by all means, go ahead and use something like that. But remember, most of those diets don't have enough of the joint protective agents in it to be therapeutic, that you may still have to supplement with other things to get it right up to therapeutic levels.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Fran in Door County, we turn to you now. Hi, Fran.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I hope this question is appropriate on the air. I have a 3-year-old dog who likes to eat poops.
Oh, yeah. I haven't talked about that in a long time.
yours
well,
is not the
chance.
Only dog.
Yeah.
No, I know it's not uncommon, but I've tried everything I know how to get him to stop.
Now, is this his own or...
No, I have 2 other dogs.
Okay.
And he likes theirs better than his.
Oh, my goodness.
He's 3 now. He's done this since he was a puppy. I let them out in the backyard, and I keep it picked up real well. But if I let them out at night, you know, in the morning, there's something out there. And he can dig under the snow and find frozen poopsicles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he enjoys those very much.
Oh, boy. Yeah. You know, this is one of these tough problems to deal with because he's eating the other dog's droppings. There's a few things that you need to do, and you're doing the right stuff. Be out there with him, redirect him to appropriate things, take a frisbee, a tennis ball, something that you can throw and he can put in his mouth. Make sure you're keeping the stool cleaned up as best you can. And I know there's going to be times where you're going to be missing some. Because he's been doing this for about 3 years, I really doubt that the over-the-counter products that you can buy, there's one called Forbid and another one called Deter, whose little logo is the number one product for dogs that eat number 2. And they both go in the mouth, they mix it with their food, and it makes the stool taste bad. So what you would have to do is put this in the food of your other 2 dogs so that their stool tastes bad. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, what will happen is he may avoid the stools for a while and go, oh, bad season for poop. Don't do it. You get this false sense of security that, all right, this is, you know, working fine, and you stop using it, and then he goes right back to eating it again. So,
I did try both of those, and it had no effect.
Yeah.
We tried hot sauce.
Yeah. And if you have to go to that much trouble to sprinkle hot sauce on the poop, pick it up, you know.
It was kind of nutty to go out there and do that. And we did try that deer repellent that you put on your shrubs.
Yeah.
That smells absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
But it seemed to enhance things. And then the other 2 dogs started eating it.
Yeah, because it's, I know. There's a product on the market, too, called Prozyme, which is a enzyme product that you can mix with food. Some people have had some success with that as well. It's very unlikely that it is a nutritional problem. I would doubt that you have 2 dogs that have problems with their pancreas not producing enough enzymes and not digesting their food properly. But, you know, that would be, again, something that's a little pricey, but worthwhile trying as well. I wish I had a solution for you. My next door neighbor's dog, I was watching out my window, and sure enough, she was doing the same thing, picking up and tossing it in the air and playing with it. It's just one of those normal, disgusting dog behaviors. Yeah.
It's not harmful.
No.
If they're eating other dogs' stool that you're not aware of, like other dogs that you don't know their health status, they can get gastrointestinal parasites. It's kind of gross when they come in and they throw it up, you know, because it can be irritating to the stomach. And it's one of the leading causes of really bad teeth because you're packing. And frozen stuff, probably not a big deal, but the, you know, if it's soft and moist and fresh, I know, lovely, on the radio here at lunchtime, packing on the teeth, they can get periodontal disease. So, yeah.
All right. There you have it, Fran. Thanks for calling. Amos in Sauk County. Hi.
Hi, Hi, Larry. I heard the guy with a 15-year-old cat, and I tried not to call, and then heard the guy with the 18-year-old cat. So I'm going to give you the alternative to this program, which is I think this is, a lot of this advice is immoral towards animals. And what veterinarians and drug companies have a vested interest in stringing along animals as long as they can so they can make a profit. And you've got 5 to 6 million animals are being killed in animal shelters every year. You've got incredible need for healthy young animals to have homes. And instead we have advice that an 18-year-old cat that's in pain is supposed to be kept along with expensive technology. So, and, you know, the person that called in, he clearly was thinking of the right decision, which is to put his cat under and to get a young, healthy cat. And it just, you know, we went through this with humans in the 70s and 80s, and finally people were fed up with that, and they started fighting back. Animals, they don't have any way to say, you know, I'm in pain, I want to go. And you've got, you know, Sandy on here saying, well, okay, I'll make a buck if I can keep this animal going. And you've got Pfizer and all these guys saying, I'll make a buck if we can keep these animals going. And
Well, I tell you what, I don't think that's what you said at all. So
no,
I'm going to break in.
No,
right.
I mean, I think, you know, pets are, in for many people, considered family members. And they go through just as much soul searching when it comes to, you know, do we put grandma in a nursing home or keep her with us? Can we still care for them? To, you know, this 18-year-old cat who's been a family member for a long time, who sounds like he's still probably enjoying life to some degree. And that is up to the owner to help decide. And if I feel that a pet is in distress, I mean, by all means, no pet. I mean, my number one thing is no pet should live in pain. And if the owner, you know, wants to, feels that the cat's or dog's life is still worth living, pain control is, you know, just humane way of dealing with this. And that's what I was talking about. And I think he's being very wise to realize that, you know, she's 18, she's got some kind of disease that we have not got a diagnosis for, and may not live very long. And when do we make that choice? And it's an individual choice. And you know, I think the big problem with all these pets being euthanized is the fact that we've got so many unspayed and unneutered pets out there that are reproducing. And I think that's the issue, not, you know, the fact that we're keeping these older pets alive.
All right. Thanks, Amos. Steve in Sheboygan Falls, your turn now. Hi, Steve.
Hello there. The young lady before me kind of stole my thunder about the poop issue. So you pretty much answered my question there. I have a one-year-old German Shepherd, and he's been doing that lately, but I guess pretty much you answered the question on that category there for me. But the other question I would have is, I heard before you were talking about giving a dog senior food, but when do you take a dog off of puppy food and put him on to a more adult food? What recommendation is for that age?
Yeah, typically, I mean, I do it when they're 6 or 7 months of age for most dogs, because that's about the time that where they're being spayed or neutered, and that's when their metabolism's being altered and they don't need to be on the high-octane rocket fuel puppy food. They can go on to an adult food at that point because we don't want them to get overweight. But for some giant breed dogs, the dogs that are, you know, growing over a 2-year period of time, it could be even longer keeping them on it. So we'll, you know, there's a lot of variability that way. But, you know, the old saying, you know, feed them the puppy food for a full year till they're full grown. Boy, I mean, that again, a Chihuahua is going to mature so much faster than a St. Bernard. So you have to judge on dog breed and then whether they're altered or not. So typically, I'll go back 5 or 7 months of age, you know, somewhere 6, 7 months of age would be a good time to think about doing it.
Okay, and one quick question about as far as being neutered, what is your recommendation? How long is it safe to wait to neuter a male German Shepherd?
Well, we like to neuter them before they become sexually, you know, active and wanting to run around and chase the ladies down the street and start lifting his leg on things and getting into trouble by fighting with other boy dogs. So, you know, doing it before puberty is a good idea. And that's why we like to have it done at that age. Now, humane societies and many rescue groups will do spays and neuters much earlier than that because they are trying to be responsible to make sure that an intact animal is not being put out into the general public that could add to the population problem as well. So for some of these pets, they're being altered by the time they're 8 to 12 weeks of age. Not uncommon to do it that early. I don't know how old your dog is right now. About a year, yeah.
Right.
I mean, he's at that point where definitely if he's not going to be used for show or for breeding, time to get him neutered.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you for calling, Steve. Appreciate it. And let's go to Madison next. Talk to Perry. Hi, Perry. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. It's a great show. I love the advice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My question is, I have Yellow Lab. She's wonderful. She's 8 years old. She has also been diagnosed with Lyme disease and Ehrlichia.
Okay.
And she has gone from this very active puppy-like dog to an old dog overnight. And I listened to your advice regarding the Lyme disease. I just didn't know if you had any additional comments with the Ehrlichia. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I've done the double dose of antibiotics, and we've got it under control right now, but she's still very lame and just very lethargic.
Yeah. What is Ehrlichia, by the way?
It's another tick-borne disease that is, you know, we're seeing it more in this state. Ehrlichia canis is the typical one that dogs get. We're also seeing another disease called anaplasma. And our my routine now, heartworm check, is I'm recommending that when we do blood for heartworm check, that we also test for these three tick-borne diseases, Lyme disease, Ehrlichia, and anaplasma. It sounds like that's what your veterinarian's doing, probably doing that combination test to be able to pick up on things like that. And remember that Ehrlichia test just indicates exposure, just like the Lyme test is. It indicates exposure. Doesn't mean that they're actually sick with the disease. But, you know, following up with getting some a blood cell count done is not a bad idea because sometimes we can see some abnormalities on the CBC with those results with that particular disease. So hopefully your veterinarian did some other follow-up lab work to make sure that your dog is healthy and happy. Your dog's also an eight-year-old dog, and it may be that the lameness is not all Lyme related, but it's possible that we do have some joint issues with that. So, you know, besides treating appropriately and doing the monitoring before the disease, also be looking at using some anti-inflammatories because your dog sounds like it's in pain and may do better if it's on something on a once to twice a day basis, similar to what we would take if we hurt. And that may allow your dog to be able to maintain some joint function and muscle tone so they're not laying around and getting weaker, which is going to be harder on those joints.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. Larry Mueller here. Glad you're listening in. If you want to join in our conversation, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in Madison, at 263-1890. Let's go to Karen and Stevens Point next. Karen, hi.
Hi there. We're thinking of adopting an Italian greyhound.
Mm-hmm.
And when a rescue, you know, a rescue situation. And when I've looked online at just at greyhounds in general, one of the comments about rescuing them is that it can be a real hard time as far as being house trained.
Hmm.
And I don't know if you've know anything about that?
Yeah, anytime a dog that you don't know their, you know, how they've been raised, especially if they've been raised in a cage or, you know, just not been in a home situation, can present some, you know, interesting dilemmas if they've started going to the bathroom just in their crate or their cage because they were left in one. Those are going to be hard dogs. You bring them into your house, you put them in your cage, and they go, great, I'm in a toilet, so I can just go here. So it's going to take a little extra understanding, but it's going to depend on how the dog was raised. Now, many rescue groups will foster dogs, and they have them in homes. And so some of the work has already been done for you by the people that are doing the fostering. So that would be, again, you know, questions to be asking before you start adopting a dog to find out, you know, if anybody knows its personality and its quirks. And hopefully you'll find one that doesn't have that as a problem.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for calling. And Louie in Waukesha, your turn now. Hi there.
Okay, thank you. I have another food problem, a question.
Okay.
And that is raw versus the bag stuff.
For dogs now.
And, right. And, for example, there are raw diets. One of them you're probably familiar with is the barf diet. So do you have any feelings about comparing those two?
Well, as a veterinarian, I find that the research that's been done on the raw diets has shown that many of them can be cultured positive for Salmonella and E. coli. I just had a family in this morning with a little dog, and the woman's pregnant, and they're going to be having a baby, and they were asking about raw diets. And boy, you have to be so careful about the food dishes and the dog's waste material. Although the dog may be able to tolerate it, it's the humans that we get worried about. The other thing that's been shown is if the diet is being made by your average person, and I know there's a lot of people out there that do a great job with coming up with a homemade diet, but there tends to be a recipe shift. You start dropping things from the diet. So this little dog that I had in this morning was only eating hamburger and rice, no mineral supplement, no vitamin supplement, and it was white rice, so they had very little fiber. I mean, this was a very deficient diet. And so they had gone from good intentions to easy for them, but obviously not great for the dog. So that's one of the problems that I run into is recipe shift and people not feeding a balanced diet. Okay. There are some raw diets that are commercially available that you can buy at pet stores frozen. Yeah. And again, even those you can find culture this, you know, bacteria potentially pathogenic to the human and to potentially maybe to the dog as well. The bag diets, there are all kinds of different qualities of foods out there that meet many people's needs for if they want a holistic diet, a less expensive diet. The whole gamut's out there, and I think that it's probably unnecessary to do a lot of cooking for your dog. That we have never had pets live as long as they do now because we've been feeding them appropriately for decades now.
Can I just please add this concern, and that is has a relationship to allergies. I've got one dog that she'd gone through the whole rigmarole, the shots, you know, and she had the shots for one session. I repeated it, and she still seems, and I'm attesting to allergy because she does all this excessive scratching. And would there, in your opinion, be any difference in the nature of the food in relationship to that allergy?
Well, I think the big thing that you can do if you have a dog with allergies is make sure that they're on an appropriate level of omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids, because that can have some effect on decreasing the itchiness of the dog's body. So making sure that that's a good supplement that's in the food. When it comes to food allergies in dogs, though, most dogs develop food allergies to the protein in the diet, and it doesn't matter how it's presented to them, whether it's something from the human grocery store that you get out of the meat tray or from the bag. It can be beef or chicken or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, in that testing, we found out she has a couple food allergies, but the testing, of course, presented those.
Yeah.
And I, even when I buy bag food, I make sure that that food is not in that food, in that diet. Okay, well, you're answering my question. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Kate in Galena, Illinois, your turn now. Hi, Kate.
Hi. We have a 2-year-old blue-tipped Himalayan cat with 3 legs who had 3.5 when he was born, so we had it trimmed. But anyway, he's having problems. He quit going to the bathroom in his litter box.
Okay.
He still poos there, but he doesn't pee there, and he has a thing with rugs, you know.
Yeah.
So we're basically like kind of wondering what we should do, you know.
How many litter boxes do you have?
We have one.
Oh, well,
one cat.
Yeah, but that may be the problem. You know, a lot of cats like to urinate in one place and defecate in another. And he's got 3 legs, and I don't know, where's the litter box located?
It's kind of in a darker area, like a closet, but it's open. It's like a mudroom.
Yeah, yeah. Is he fed there too, or is he fed elsewhere?
No, okay. He's fed elsewhere.
He's fed elsewhere too. You know, sometimes as cats get older, and cats like this with 3 legs, could potentially have some orthopedic issues. And if it's hard to get to the litter box, you know, I'm going to go elsewhere because it's more convenient. And who would have guessed that the carpet is that absorbent? You know, it works really well.
Right.
So, you know, I think the things that I would recommend is, number one, get him in to your veterinarian to make sure that he doesn't have an underlying health problem that's causing him to have some urinary urgency that he can't get to the litter box in time. So that'd be the first step. Then be looking at changing your management. And you may need to be looking at adding in extra litter boxes and providing your cat with a smorgasbord of litters as well. Long-haired cats, you said this is a Himalayan, and they are
trimmed often. But...
Yeah, they are probably one of the Persians, and Himalayans are just a color variation of a Persian-type body build. They are the number one cat for litter box aversion, and I don't know whether it's because the perfumes on the litter stick to their hair or the litter sticks to their feet or just what it is, but make sure that you give him what he likes too. And most cats like the soft, scoopable, sandy litter, but boy, I've been surprised at what some cats will go into. So giving them a few extra litter boxes, and remember the size of the litter box is important too. A big hairy cat that's got three legs that may not be quite as mobile, the litter box should be about 1.5 times the length of the cat's body from head to butt. So I just went out and replaced all my litter boxes, which I do every year because plastic will hold all the odor no matter how you clean it. Mm-hmm. And so every year I go out, and January is always the big storage bin container sales. And so just went to one of the big discount stores and got some of these blue plastic bins that are nice and translucent. Take the lid off, throw the lid out. Now I got litter boxes. And they were cheap. They're big. They hold a lot. And that worked really well. So more litter boxes, I think.
Okay. And also, can it have something to do with his food? I've heard that he has like crystals in his urine, so it's painful.
Why you're going into your veterinarian to make sure that there isn't an underlying urinary tract problem that could be leading to this. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Ron in Traverse City, Michigan next. Hi, Ron.
Hi, thank you. I have a yellow Labrador Retriever that just turned 11, and she's a guide dog that I got from Leader Dogs for the Blind in Rochester, Michigan. She started this last summer. We try to walk about 3 miles a day when I'm up in Grand Marais in the summer. And in the winter, we're doing about a mile a day and a little less now that it's cold. But she has started limping badly on her right front leg if we walk closer to the 2 or 3 miles. And it only seems to be the right front leg. In the morning, she's always fine and runs and is happy. And it's as it gets more toward night, depending on how much we walk, depends on how bad it is. Number one, I was wondering if X-raying that leg would help at all. Number two, when I had her to the vet, they said, well, if days when it's bad, give her an aspirin, which I've been doing, and wrapping in cream cheese, and she's happy to have. But I don't do it every day because it may only be a couple of days a week when she's bad. So I wondered, should I cut down on the exercise or just continue the aspirin?
This is a dilemma. The exercise is going to help support the muscles that help support the joints. And without the muscling, then they're not going to have the joint support that they need, and it could aggravate arthritis. I think you need to go in and talk to your veterinarian maybe about getting x-rays. Your dog's at that age. I mean, awful things like bone cancer and different things can show up that may be able to be dealt with differently. But usually those dogs are in horrible, horrible pain and not and indicating what you're telling me is that, it seems to be only brought on with exercise. If your dog is diagnosed with arthritis, keep the weight down. That's number one. Look at adding in glucosamine, chondroitin sulfate as a supplement. And I worry about long-term aspirin use. Even small doses of aspirin in dogs is always been associated with causing, and when we've gone in and scoped dogs that after having aspirin, getting little gastric ulcers. So going with something that's safer for the dog's GI tract, and there are several anti-inflammatories on the market that are made for dogs that, and it depends on, what company your veterinarian likes to deal with. There's one called Meloxicam that's a liquid once a day, Deramax, Rimadyl, Prevacox, and every dog's a little bit different as to which one they tolerate better. And so start with one and try it for a couple of weeks and see if it makes a difference in your dog's quality of life.
All right.
Is it something I should do every day or just do when I notice they're limping badly?
It can be used either way. If you feel that it is a daily type thing, it may make her feel a little more comfortable. And, you know, just to go back, other things, there's joint diets on the market, one called JM and another one called JD, which some dogs with arthritis have done better on as well. And don't discount some of the alternative treatments like acupuncture and maybe chiropractic care if it's something like a neck injury or a problem that way. For a working dog, that may be something to be looking into as well, especially if you've got a harness on your dog.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. And Susie in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Susie.
Hi there. I have a question in regards to my 8-month-old yellow Labrador. He is a boy, and we want to get him neutered. However, we're waiting for one more testicle to drop.
It won't. It won't. No, at this point, by 8 months of age, if it's not already there, it's probably not going to drop. They should be down at the time that you go to purchase your puppy when they're 6, 7, 8 weeks of age. They should be there. Once in a while, you'll get the odd dog where it takes a couple of months for it to be able to descend into the scrotum. But this is going to be a little trickier to neuter them. It's important that you do get them neutered. You don't want to pass this on to future generations. And that retained testicle could be more prone to cancer. It may twist and tours. And remember, if you just take the one that you can see out, he'll still be virile, just won't be fertile with the retained testicles. So both of them need to go.
Okay. So thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Probably not what she wanted to hear.
No, it's going to be a much more major surgery. Yeah.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, our guest today as we talk about your pet's health. And she'll be with us right up until 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor in the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, talking your pet's health. And pleased to have you listening in. For sure, give us a call if you have a question for us at 1-800-642-1234, or if you are in Madison at 263-1890. And let's talk about blastomycosis before we go back to the phones, Dr. Sandy.
Okay.
What are the symptoms? How do they get it?
This is a soil-borne fungus. And in certain parts of the state, northern part of the state primarily, and along some of the waterways and so on, you do see patches of it. Dogs, because they're down at ground level, are more predisposed to picking it up, but it's also something that humans can get as well.
I had it.
You did. I know. Yeah, that was a few years ago. And it's not a fun disease. It's long-term treatment. And, you know, typically the signs that you'll see will be either respiratory signs where it affects the lungs. It can cause draining sores and so on, fever. It will sometimes enter into the eye and can cause blindness and require to have the dog to have the eye removed. So it's a horrible disease. And unfortunately, unless you keep your dog in a bubble, there is no way you can prevent them from, you know, being exposed. We think that there may be some type of, you know, immune compromise in some of the dogs that get it, that their immune system just isn't 100% up to snuff, which is, you know, what predisposed them to getting it in the first place. But yeah, it's one of those things that living here in Wisconsin, we do see, and it's always one of those things in the back of our mind.
And avoid it if you can.
You can. Yep.
Don in Brill, your turn now. Hi, Don.
Hi, thanks so much for this program.
Sure.
I have a 6-year-old Newf, a male, a very large male. He's about 200 pounds. And a couple years ago, while I was playing with him with his rope, the vet explained it to me like he pivoted on his leg like much like a football player.
Mm-hmm.
And tore the all the ligaments up in the knee.
Oh, boy.
And he couldn't even, like, walk on it. He held it up. And, of course, big dogs don't get along good on 3 legs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did surgery. It was a long healing process, but that one turned out fine. Now his other knee has the same thing has happened, only not as severe.
Mm-hmm.
He will. I've been babying it along, and we've had him on this. I think it's Prevacox.
Okay.
Something, and I give him one of those a day, and that certainly helps him. But I can't take him for walks or anything anymore because if he walks at all, then it really gets bad.
Yeah.
And at 6 years old, I'm wondering: is it should I have the other knee surgery or should I keep him on the pills?
Yeah, this is again one of those dilemmas. Many dogs that rupture an anterior cruciate on one side will, and I don't remember what the percentage is, but it's over half within the next year will rupture the other side.
Yeah.
When we get a dog in that's ruptured an anterior cruciate on one side, we start letting them know that they've got to get the weight off the dog. We've got to, you know, be looking at, you know, watching to make sure that they're not overextending, hurting themselves, but, you know, trying to maintain the muscle, looking at good physiotherapy, you know, approved exercise programs. And unfortunately, your dog went ahead and did this. It sounds like it was almost 2 years afterwards, but it may be just a partial tear. It may be that the other side had more involvement with maybe the meniscus being torn, which caused more pain. But a 6-year-old Newfie, they can go on to live for a few more years yet. So I think it's up to you as to whether you do surgery or not. Without surgery, he's going to have a knee that's going to become arthritic and painful for him. And the pain meds that you're using right now, the anti-inflammatory medication, may not hold him all his life.
Yeah. See, the vet felt of it the first time. He was able to just by feeling it, he knew what was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this one, he has felt it, and he said that, you know, it doesn't feel at all like the other one did, but it feels like a little click in there, and so he said but, you know, I'm concerned about, you know, I can't exercise him, and he's, although he's about 200 pounds, he is not overweight. I mean, you can feel all his ribs.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a big dog.
Yeah.
And I'm concerned if I can't exercise him.
Now, you may be looking at getting into an orthopedist and looking at having the joint scoped so they can see what's going on in there. But before you ever do that, get x-rays done and make sure that the knee is felt or palpated under sedation. In an awake animal that guards their knee, you may not get the same movement that you would as they would when they're asleep. So have a sedated dog x-rays done of the knee, and then, you know, consider having a specialist maybe even look in there and see what's going on.
Okay. And one more quick question. He's a couch potato. He loves to be in the house. Does that hurt a dog like him to be in the house?
Well, most Newfies prefer to be buried out in a snowbank, but,
if we're in the house, he wants to be in the house.
And that may just be a social thing that he prefers to be with you. He likes the company. You may keep your house cooler for him, and that may make it comfortable. But, yeah, I'm surprised because they don't like room temperature very often. Yeah, well, he's adjusted.
Thanks, Don.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Linda in Mount Horeb, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I have a dilemma. I have a neighbor who lives about 4 blocks away. And he's persistent on bringing his dog to my yard every day. Well, I've tried to talk to him, and I have to start working with the dog because I'm not getting any success with the owner.
When he's going to the bathroom in your yard?
Yeah.
Oh, is he picking it up?
Well, it's more of the urine that's killing the grass. And
okay.
I've kind of asked nicely, but to no success. So I'm kind of wondering, maybe the dog's pretty nice, so maybe he'll understand if there's something I can put down this time of year that's kind of effective that'll keep him kind of walking by or
barbed wire? No. Yeah. Unfortunately, this is a human type issue. All he has to do is keep the leash short and keep walking past your yard.
Right.
You know, one of the things that you may want to do if this is a male dog, they would be inclined to go on a vertical object more likely than just a flat spot. So putting in a post out at the front of your property with some gravel around it that may attract him to using that, so he's attracted to that rather than your bushes or anything else, That may help, but I think this is, I'm the wrong person. You need a psychologist to be able to tell you what to do when it comes to the person. And yeah, I mean, I've had some conflict with neighbors as well, with dogs defecating in my yard, and I'm always, you know, good at trying to pick things up. But yeah, I don't know how to tell you to keep friends with your neighbors, and yeah, that's a tough situation. Yeah.
Well, and he walks past so many open lots, and he has to come four blocks down, so it's kind of
yeah.
He's found his spot. But the owner could train him to
keep the leash short. Yeah. Right. Keep the leash short, and that's the big thing. Just get past your property until he gets onto an open lot or something that isn't owned by anybody, and then maybe the dog can learn to go there.
Right. Well, I appreciate your help.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for calling. Oh, rude owners.
I know.
That's too bad.
It's hard.
Patty in Wausau. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about my golden retriever. He is 9 years old. He has about 6 or 7 fatty tumors. Is this common in large breed dogs, and will they get to a certain size and then quit enlarging?
Yeah, the lipomas are these type of fatty tumors. They're called a lipoma.
Right.
Very common subcutaneous, meaning under the skin, growth in dogs in general. Doesn't have to be large breed dogs. It's just very, very common. Once a dog gets one, many dogs will get multiple, and they're not based on metabolism. Your dog could be very slender, or even if they're overweight now and you were to put them on a diet, they would lose other body fat, but these would not be affected by weight loss. They would just stay there. They like to be over the rib cage and the abdomen sometimes, mm-hmm. but those are, the trunk is the main spot that we see them in. They can, there are other tumors that mimic mast cell tumors, or lipomas, and I just gave it away. There's one called a mast cell tumor that can feel like a lipoma, but it's actually a more malignant tumor that needs to be taken care of. My own old Basset Hound developed a type of cancer called hemangiosarcoma under the skin, cutaneous hemangiosarcoma. It felt just like one of his lipomas, but it turned out to be something more. So if you've got a fatty growth that is new, point it out to your veterinarian. I, for all my patients, we do a body map and we keep it in the record, and any new lumps or bumps, we do a needle aspirate of it, where we do a biopsy with a needle to determine what kind of cancer it is. If it's just the benign lipoma, great. We mark it on the chart and then we don't have to worry about it anymore. If it's something else, then we follow up on it. But we need to know when the new ones pop up so we can determine whether they truly are a lipoma. Whether they grow or not, that's all dependent on the lipoma's own biology. Some of them will get to be quite big, could be like the size of a baseball or bigger. Others stay small. And if it's in a spot, like the armpit or right on the sternum when your dog lays down, where it's got this firm mass that it needs to lay down on, those would be the ones that we take off. The rest of them are probably all just cosmetic eyesores and your dog doesn't care.
Okay. So I would have the larger ones, would you do all of them at one time? Take all of them off once he's sedated?
Boy, that could be major surgery, depending on where they're located and how deep they are. And if they're not bothering the dog, I wouldn't worry about them.
Oh.
I'd only take the ones off that are causing your dog some discomfort.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Patty. Carol in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a Bichon Frise. She's about 6 years old, 7 years old. And when she was a couple years, a little, maybe year and a half, 2 years, she developed a kidney stones.
Hmm.
And one was so severe, I kept taking them in and they were treating her for infections, and it was actually this stone. And it had lodged itself in her urethra. They had to go in surgically.
Wow.
And blast it back into her bladder and then remove it, because she was not able to go to the bathroom after a while. So the vets always felt really bad about it.
Yeah.
And but anyway, he gave her a special diet, and it's made her very fat. And he said, well, it's a very fatty food,
mm-hmm.
but if you switch the food, you run the risk of getting the kidney stones back.
Right. And it's actually probably bladder stones, not kidney stones. But okay. All right.
So we're really concerned because she's 26 pounds and she's a little dog.
Okay.
Mm, and so we've tried to exercise her, but she's a little princess. She goes so far and then that's it. She's not going any further.
Yeah. Portion control. I mean, you can feed her less of what you're currently feeding her. And there's other diets on the market. There's not every veterinarian may carry them, but getting a different brand that may have a lower caloric content may be helpful as well. So there's several companies now that have come out with therapeutic diets, and that's, you know, so you may not be stuck with that one. So check with your veterinarian unless it's something. Do you know what kind of stone she had?
No, I don't, but it's made her... Her appetite is voracious. She will walk through hot coals if you're walking with food. And she is very, very... He gave her dry food and the canned food.
Okay.
And she will eat about maybe a couple handsful of the dry food a day, but she'll eat maybe a quarter of a can of the hard food, and I've mixed it with a couple things to make it more palatable for her. But she is... The weight is just, now we've heard, well, why don't you take her to a dog, you know, there's a lot of people around that do special diets for dogs, but I'm so afraid of her getting the kidney stones back
or
whatever they were.
Yeah, this would be something to talk to your veterinarian about. Is there an alternative diet that I can use that's maybe a little bit lower in calories? Are we still feeding her the right amount? Your two handfuls. I don't like using handfuls. Use a measuring cup so that you know exactly how much she's getting. Make sure nobody else is supplementing her and saying, well, we'll give her another handful, because sometimes other family members will start adding to this as well. Have one person in charge of feeding. Really be looking at her exercise program. And I started the show off, you know, talking about this new drug that's out there, but there's one that's going to be launched soon by Pfizer called Slentrol, and she may be a candidate for something like that. So bring that up with your veterinarian as well. It's not available yet, but if she's, you know, always mooching and hungry, this would be the perfect drug for her.
So, it's called Slentrol?
Slentrol, and it's by the Pfizer company. It's not available yet to veterinarians, but it's been approved. The packaging's all set, and it'll probably be launched probably sometime this spring.
Wow, because he told me there was nothing else he could give her, and he said you'd almost have to starve her to get her to lose weight.
Yeah, yeah.
And this dog eats like no dog I've ever seen.
Yeah.
She's very persistent. If you sit down and she's still hungry, she'll just sit and bark at you relentlessly till she gets food.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and some of that's just behavior, and it has nothing to do with being hungry. It's kind of like, you know, like me. It's just like, it's, hey, it's lunchtime, let's eat. Hey, it's 3 o'clock, let's eat, you know, and it's, you get into the habit of eating, and so, yeah, maybe having her out of the room when you're eating. Be looking at feeding her food in unique ways so that it slows her eating down, putting it in, one of those Buster cubes, or putting some obstacles in her bowl to make her have to work around it so that she eats slower, have her hunt for her diet. That may make mealtime last a little bit longer. She will have some fun. It'll maybe give her a little bit of exercise and give you a little peace of mind as well.
Right. Well, we'll try those.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Carol. And Holly in Elm Grove now, we turn to you. Hi, Holly.
Good morning, and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a 5-year-old German Shepherd female, and just before Memorial Day last year, she blew out her ACL, which I have come to understand is really called a CCL. But nonetheless, she had a tibial plateau leveling osteotomy.
And same with my dog.
Yeah?
He had that done in October, so yeah.
Well,
okay.
And she's doing just great. 8 months post-op, she's really doing great, except she's also taking Adequin injections every month. Every other hip, and where we were very successful in losing some weight, I should say she was very successful. She got down to 88 pounds, but now the Adequin has stirred up the appetite. She's back up to 93. She's also extraordinarily interested in exercise. She runs like the wind. It scares me to death. And so I guess my question is, other than the hydrotherapy, which we're continuing to do just because of the weather, quite frankly, are there braces for dogs' knees? I'm worried about the other one. I don't want her to blow it out, because I really don't want to spend
That's expensive surgery. It is expensive surgery. This is something that I just brought up with our physiotherapist at the vet school, and because she's into all the, you know, anything she can do to help support the other knee during physiotherapy. And unfortunately, because of the way dogs are made, where their knee sits up close to their abdominal wall, you can't keep a brace on. And there's nothing available for dogs that will protect that knee and stabilize it like a human's knee. And it's because of the angles and just the dog's anatomy. So no, there isn't anything like that you can do. Your dog's weight gain, I doubt that it's related to the Adequan. I really do, because that's just going to be supporting the joint. It may just be that your dog feels good, and it's up to you then to do just what we talked about with the last person, portion control, going to lower calorie foods, and, you know, working on, like you're doing with unique exercise, such as, you know, going to some of these dog pools that are available now. I know we've got them around. We have one in Madison now that has a doggy gym that you can go to and your dog can swim and get lots of great exercise that way.
Other than the because when she blew out the knee, it was on a sprint within those first two steps. If she's already going full speed ahead, is she just in as much risk as if she were in that initial two steps of sprint?
I mean, all she has to do is twist the wrong way, and her knee is anatomically designed probably, if she had to have the other one fixed, the other one's at risk. And it's one of those things where who knows. My dog, all he did was he was walking on the rocks on a shore, and I have no idea what happened, but he, you know, all of a sudden came up lame, so he probably just twisted it. So you don't even have to be running to have it happen.
Well, that surely puts my mind at ease.
Okay.
Well, at least I know I can't wrap it up in an ace bandage.
No.
Support it.
Thanks, Holly.
Thank you.
And Kari in River Falls, your turn now. Hi, Kari.
Hi. I have a question about dental hygiene. We have a Sheltie, she's 8, and a Golden Retriever, and he's 4. And their breath was really bad, so I started brushing their teeth. And I bought them those greenies to chew on, but on their canine teeth, it looks like a huge plaque buildup. So is it in my best interest? Would it be cheaper now to go in and, like, get that scraped off? Will brushing and those greenies take care of it?
Yeah, because
I'm thinking it's going to be a lot of money if I don't do something.
You're right. And, you know, you're doing everything you can, but it sounds like if you've got visible plaque building up on the teeth and tartar building up on the teeth, that you need to have them professionally cleaned. So going in now before you have significant periodontal disease is going to be better for the health of your dog as well as your pocketbook. So,
and do I go to a special vet or my regular vet?
Most veterinarians do dentistry now, and they have well-trained technicians that can do it. You want to make sure that they are polishing the teeth afterwards, that they're using, you know, probably gas anesthetic, that they're intubated for the procedure. But for routine cleaning, you probably don't need the assistance of a veterinary specialist. We do have veterinarians at the vet school that do specialty dentistry care. They're absolutely wonderful. But if it's just getting that tartar off the teeth, I'm sure that your veterinarian is well-equipped at doing it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And Fritz in Fish Creek. Hi.
Good morning or afternoon. Yep. I was a breath question and a diet question. Is it good to switch the feeding morning and afternoon or one time a day? And regarding breath, can the dog have oil of mint or chlorophyll?
Well, when it comes to feeding, I like to see dogs fed twice a day. It cuts down on mooching, and especially for large breed dogs that have a deep chest that may be prone to having their stomach twist, feeding them twice a day may help cut down on some of the risks for having gastric dilation and torsion. If your dog's breath is bad enough that you think that they need a breath mint, then there's probably disease going on in the mouth. We go into our dentist twice a year to have our teeth cleaned. At least that's what's recommended. We brush and we floss every day. That's what dogs ideally need to have their teeth taken care of through the veterinarian. So rather than covering up the smell, get those teeth checked out and have the teeth cleaned. And if necessary, you know, your dog may need to have some, you know, extra care done, teeth extracted and so on, to be able to get that mouth in better shape. And then that should make the breath smell better.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. How often should we take a dog in for dental?
Well, every year they should have a physical exam done. In fact, for many dogs, having it done twice a year isn't a bad idea. But dogs that are at risk for certain things like, you know, heart disease and older dogs, twice a year exams are good. And that's the time that the teeth are looked at. Some dogs need to have their teeth cleaned twice a year, but once a year, you know, and initially that may not even have to be that often.
And kitties?
Same thing.
Same thing.
All right.
Sandy, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, where she serves as a clinical professor and does a wonderful job caring for her clients' pets. And I thank you all for listening. Tomorrow, don't forget, Scott Craven will be with us. Take a look at the wonderful world of Wisconsin wildlife. So we'll look forward to that as well. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.